Hello and welcome to On the Brighter Side. I'm your host, Monica Tanner, and I'm super excited about my new friend and our interview today with Dr. Wyatt Fisher. Dr. Fisher has a master's and doctorate in clinical psychology and is a licensed psychologist in Boulder, Colorado. He's been married since 1999, and his own relationship has been to the brink of divorce and back. So he helps couples from both a personal and professional perspective. Welcome, Dr. Fisher. How are you doing?
Doing good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. Let's start by having you tell us a little bit about yourself and your family.
Yeah. So like you mentioned, so I'm married, been married since 1999. My wife and I have four kids, and they're from ages 12 to 17. And so we have our hands full, like I'm sure most people can relate. And let's see. So yeah, so I'm a psychologist myself, and my wife actually just finished her graduate school. So she's also a therapist now. So we have two strengths in the house.
Oh boy. You know what? I grew up just like that. And I used to say to my parents, stop psychobabbling me.
Yeah, I know. You got to be careful, right? You got to leave your psychobabble hat at the office.
It's true. Especially when your kids get into those teenage years, it's kind of like, are they analyzing everything that I say?
Totally. Yeah, we have to be careful of that.
Yeah, so good. So you're obviously an experienced psychologist. You've been practicing for many years. This is not an easy route or an easy profession. So what led you to psychology?
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of it was just some of the hardships I went through growing up myself. I'm from a broken family. My parents got divorced when I was six. And so I had step siblings, step parents, and all sorts of problems with all that. And so I think just experiencing firsthand how that felt and what that was like, having a, you know, broken up family like that, planted a seed in my heart to want to help others. And eventually, as I got older, to want to help marriages in particular. And so that was kind of the original, I think, motivation for me wanting to go into the field of psychology, is to help other people.
Yeah, that's a great motivation. I love it. So you stated in the intro that your own relationship has been to the brink of divorce and back. Tell us about that journey and what you've learned from it.
Yeah, well, first of all, I know firsthand how it feels to have a hard, challenging marriage. You know, marriage is not for the faint of heart. It's so easy to want to give up. And especially when you're not feeling in love or your needs aren't being met, it can be overwhelming. And so I definitely leverage that a lot, because I try not to come off as like the expert on the stage who has it all figured out, but instead of someone who's been in the trenches and knows firsthand how it feels, and that I'm actually journeying alongside of other couples on the matrimony trail. And so, yeah, so for our own journey, I mean, it was just we had a lot of vicious cycles from trauma in both of our backgrounds that just fed off each other. So there was definitely seasons of winter where our needs were being met and a lot of resentment was building and things were hanging on by a thread. You know, I had to realize that I couldn't be a marriage counselor to my own marriage. That was hard, you know, because initially I had to swallow my pride around that. Because my wife obviously doesn't see me as a marriage counselor. She sees me as her partner with strengths and weaknesses. So yeah, we had to reach out for help and, you know, reach out for other therapists to help us. And I'm really glad that we did, because we were able to work through a lot of our issues and our dynamics and rebuild a relationship that was way better than it would have ever been.
Yeah, that's amazing. You know, I always feel like the best therapists have therapists. So
yeah, that's what they say.
You gotta believe in the process, right?
Right. That's what they say. Every counselor needs a counselor.
That's right. That's right. So in your practice and experience working with married couples, what are some of the most common challenges your clients come to you with?
Well, a lot of times they come wanting to convince me about all the things their partner is doing wrong. And so it's challenging to both validate that, but also help them look at how they're contributing. And so it's this kind of catch-22. So that's a big issue, right? Is helping them own their part. Another big one is just needs not being met, you know, whether it's needs for sexual intimacy or emotional intimacy. A lot of partners grow calloused, I think, towards their partner's needs through the years for a variety of factors. And then they get at an impasse, and then that breeds conflict, right? So when needs are not being met and the love buckets are low, then conflict escalates and grows. So a lot of times they'll come in with needing help with conflicts, and we do a lot of conflict resolution tools. But underneath that, it's them not feeling happy or lonely or because their needs aren't met. And so then eventually we get into that.
So I would love to hear from your perspective, because obviously intimacy is something that I specialize in and am pretty much obsessed with. What part do you think that lack of intimacy or not meeting each other's intimacy needs plays in, you know, kind of the bigger relationship as a whole?
Yeah, so I would say it kind of varies. I mean, there's definitely some couples where both are low libido partners, and so not having intimacy doesn't impact the relationship that much. Having said that, even if there's both low libido, intimacy bonds, right? Ideally, and it pulls, you know, the relationship together, and it creates this kind of glue that keeps couples feeling like a team. So even low libido partners has that advantage. But without a doubt, when there's a marriage where there's a high libido partner with a low libido partner, and sexual intimacy is few and far between, that is when it really can cause a lot of stress and a lot of strain. And then you get into that vicious cycle where the high libido partner is feeling unloved and unwanted. The low libido partner feels pressure and used just for their body. And so working through all those issues definitely contributes to a ton of conflict.
Yeah, for sure. So let's get right to the good stuff. One of the things you're most known for is your top 6 steps to marital happiness. And I think we all want to be happy in our marriage. So I'd love for you to just go through those with us, and we'll just dive deeper into the ones that call for that.
Yeah, so this isn't designed to be like the path or the silver bullet, these steps, but they're steps that I've come to from clinical experience and marital research, my own marriage through the years. And they're steps that I go through in my seminars that I do that I've kind of honed through the years. And so the first one is establishing a covenant foundation. And that one basically focuses on how the way we're approaching our marriage is going to greatly impact how we react to our marriage when we go through hard times. And so if it's a covenant, and I define covenant by like a long-term commitment, where even when we go through seasons where we're not in love or our needs aren't being met, that doesn't mean it's an excuse for divorce necessarily, but instead it's an opportunity to dig in deeper and work harder. The other approach though is a contract. And the contract says, I'm married to you as long as my needs are met and as long as I'm in love with you. But the moment those two things aren't there, divorce is a viable option. And so you can see how someone is approaching their marriage when you hear about why they want a divorce. And it doesn't mean the covenant approach doesn't say divorce is okay, because if there's adultery, abuse, or abandonment, you know, even though when those things happen, there still can be reconciliation, but it's harder. So there's still a path for divorce, even with the covenant approach. But the main thing is viewing marriage as this long-term, I'm in it for the long haul. I know we're going to have ups and downs. Because when couples don't expect those seasons, and then they go through the seasons, they have false or inaccurate interpretations. I must have married the wrong person. I'm never going to be happy here. So how we approach it from the onset makes a huge difference with how we react to the seasons when they occur.
Yeah, I love that. And I love the seasons of marriage too. I love thinking about how, you know, the earth kind of renews itself in these seasons, and so does our marriage. There's always going to be seasons of winter.
Yeah, true.
There's always going to be a winter, but a summer is also very cyclical. So I love thinking about marriage sometimes in those terms.
Absolutely. And it provides hope, because a lot of times, love feels like this mysterious thing. And so if we fall out of love, then we feel, well, there's no way to get it back. And so therefore I must end this relationship. But actually that's a false conclusion, because it is cyclical. And even though we're out of love now, it doesn't mean we can't work through this and fall back in love.
Love it. Love it. All right. Number 2.
Number 2 is owning your brokenness. Okay. So owning your brokenness is all about the shortcomings we all have that we bring to our marriage. They're not created from the marriage. They're probably made worse from the marriage. But, you know, we're all really good, usually, at pointing out the flaws in our partner and where they suck, basically. But we're not very good at identifying where we suck and where we fall short. And so this whole step is about infusing humility and intentionally looking at what's my part, you know, what am I bringing to the table here? How am I contributing to our vicious cycles? What can I own? And if couples can identify those areas, they're able to reconcile faster, because they're able to see both of their contributions to the conflicts. And then that's an essential ingredient to this foundation of a good marriage, is continually looking for what's my part, what can I own? So that step's all about owning your brokenness.
I love it. All right. Number 3.
Number 3 is learning to share power. And so by definition, a marriage that is sharing power is when both partners feel like they have an equal voice and that what they feel matters. And that's the ideal, but it's rare. You know, a lot of couples have one partner who's more dominant, married to someone who's more passive, and then they get that vicious cycle going where the dominant partner calls the shots and the passive partner doesn't have a voice, and that squelches intimacy and it escalates conflict. And so this step is all about the importance of that, respecting each other as equals, and it's filled with a lot of tools and how to create equality in marriage so we have an equal voice as partners so we can kind of shoulder life together. And so it's filled with lots of techniques and how to facilitate that.
Yeah, I love that so much. That when you said that, I think of who wears the pants, right? You're always wondering like who wears the pants, like
totally.
So what are some of your most important tools to create equality in your marriage?
The top one I teach, I call it bounce the ball. Mm. And basically the analogy is like a sports team. No one likes a ball hawk, right? And that's the person who just has the ball the whole time. They're not sharing the ball. And that's how a lot of us are in marriage, where we get obsessed with our position on a topic and our opinion. And so bouncing the ball is designed for partner A to talk about their position on a topic and their value underneath that position. And then you bounce the ball by saying, what do you think? And then partner B does the same. They share their position, their value underneath that. And then they bounce the ball back and say, what do you think? And at that point, things shift, because now partner A and partner B have both shared their perspectives. So now partner A has to adjust their position by a few degrees to honor what partner B just said. So they say their new position on that topic, and then they bounce the ball by saying, what do you think? And then partner B has to do the same thing. And if both have that spirit of compromising and trying to meet in the middle, eventually with that technique, they will reach a win-win. And that's the goal.
Okay, cool. I love it. All right. How about number four?
Four is developing an emotional attachment. And that one, there's kind of two sides of the coin with that one. The first side of the coin is we can't have emotional intimacy if I'm resenting you, right? Because there's resentment is part and parcel to a long-term marriage, usually. And so I got to learn how to work through my resentment towards you and you towards me. So that's a part of it. And then we also have to learn how to handle conflicts constructively, because if I'm nasty or you're nasty to me, I'm not going to feel emotionally close with you. I'm going to feel the opposite. So we have to work on resentment, conflict resolution. And then we also have to work on how do we even build emotional intimacy? What even is that? How does that look? And what do you do when one partner needs that and another partner, you know, dismisses it? So there's a lot of things I talk through on that step on how to cover all that, you know, conflict, the resentments, and how to build emotional connection.
I love it. So how do you define emotional intimacy?
I define it by sharing kind of your heart of hearts, like what's really going on for you. What are you really feeling right now in life? What are your highs? What are your lows? What are the causes for that? And some people, that's like their native tongue, right? I mean, they're very in touch. Other people, they have no idea what they're feeling and why they're feeling. So for those partners, they need some practice probably of reflecting and trying to connect the dots. And it's more of an art than a science. And so it takes time, but with time, you know, that would create that emotional intimacy, because it's not created just by me sharing. It's also by me hearing what's going on for you.
Yeah, I love it. So good. All right, let's do number five.
Number five is cultivating sexual fireworks.
Yes, this is going to be my favorite. I can already tell. Let's hear it.
Yeah, so this one goes through common problems of intimacy, whether it's unhealed previous trauma, differences in libido, you know, obviously stress, you know, things like that. And then it gets into, there's this model I talk about called the wedding cake model, and it basically has three tiers. And the base tier is all about cultivating the friendship, the relationship, and also wooing each other throughout the week. And so I talk about what that looks like for high libido and low libido partners. Then the next tier on top of that is sensual activity. And so that can be, you know, cuddling or sensual massage, things like that. Having a giver and a receiver, maximizing your five senses. But it's not sexual. It's only sensual at that point still. At the end of the sensual, on the nights where both partners are feeling arousal or open to arousal, then you move up into the sexual tier. And even at that tier, there's still options, right, of what we do. And it defers to the lower libido partner. So the low libido partner feels like they have voice and choice. Because as I'm sure you know, for a lot of low libido partners, they get trapped in obligation sex. And then that lowers their libido. And then their high libido partner gets their body, but not their soul. And so that's a big thing I talk about in that step, is the wedding cake model.
I love that. I like the way you put that, the three tiers. Very, very good. And I love how you talked about getting trapped in obligation sex, because that is such a vicious cycle and very difficult to break in a lot of couples. So yeah. What are like maybe three tips, since this is kind of where I live and love, right? What are maybe your three tips to kind of break that cycle of obligation sex?
Yeah. Well, one would be, when it comes to sensual activity or even sexual activity, in my view, there needs to be much more focus on clitoral stimulation instead of penetration, because obviously there's a lot of females who have high libidos, but there's a lot of females who have lower libidos. And that's when that trap of obligation sex can set in the most, in my experience. And so one thing I recommend for couples, heterosexual couples where the female has a lower libido, is no intercourse until after the female has reached orgasm. Because that prioritizes her experience, her pleasure, and that requires her partner to slow down and to learn about what feels good to her, what doesn't feel good. Does she need more emotional intimacy before we even enter into this sexual realm? And so that can be a game changer, because a lot of high libido partners, you know, it's fast and furious and they just want to get to it, because that's their maximum pleasure is intercourse for heterosexual couples. And then the low libido partner is left feeling like, what was that? Like, that was, what was that for me? I was like, nothing. So to reverse it, where intercourse is not allowed until the low libido partner reaches orgasm, it changes everything, you know, because now I have to really learn about you and focus on you and what it's going to light you up. So that's a big thing that I talk about that a lot of couples tend to appreciate when that's the setting that they're struggling with.
I love that tip. It makes me think of one of my previous guests. She has a podcast called You Are Not Broken. And she talks a lot about, I can't make you like melted ice cream, and a lot of higher desire. I call them desire. You're calling them libido, okay. But a lot of higher desire partners, you know, they can't understand why their lower desire partner is not excited about this sexual experience, right? And it's because it's melted ice cream. Like, if it's not pleasurable to the lower desire partner, it's really hard to talk them or even touch them into a sexual experience if you're not taking into consideration what is pleasurable for them.
Absolutely. And as I'm sure you know, the majority of females do not orgasm through intercourse because there's not enough clitoral stimulation. And so that's the issue for a lot of couples right there. And a lot of high libido partners say, hey, let's get to intercourse because that's their main event. But for low libido partners, it's all the foreplay that's the main event.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
So it's a completely different mindset.
Yep. I love it. All right. Now I think we are on number six.
Number six is staying in love. Okay. And so this kind of wraps up all the previous steps. So with this one, I focus a lot on this tool called the love bucket. And the main concept with this is figuring out what the top three fillers your partner needs to feel loved and satisfied, and the top three drainers that I do that makes you feel negative towards me. And so if I can learn to maximize the fillers you want while I'm also minimizing and reducing the drainers I do that you don't like, eventually I become irresistible to you. And if we're both doing that, filling up each other's love buckets, that's going to help us fall back in love and stay in love. And so that session is all about creating this tool to help couples do that.
I do like understanding that about each other. I don't think it's either spouse's responsibility to fill or empty each other's buckets, but I do think that it's really important to have that knowledge of what fills or empties your bucket.
Sure.
Because I think that's great information to have about each other, for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. So if you're married to someone and they love thoughtful gestures, right, and that fills up their love bucket, it's up to you if you want to give them thoughtful gestures or not.
Exactly.
Right. But at least you have that knowledge of, wow, you know, if I did more thoughtful gestures, you know, that would probably really fill up their love buckets.
Yeah.
And if they don't like it when I'm stonewalling, right, it's up to me if I stop stonewalling, but I know now that they don't like that. And every time I do it, it drains that love bucket. And so what should I do with that information?
Yeah, I love that. So I like to talk about conflict and the role it plays in intimacy. And so as a psychologist, I feel like you probably see a lot of conflict. What is your thought on the role conflict plays in intimacy?
So when you say the role, do you mean like how intimacy problems contribute to conflict, or?
Oh, that's a good question. You could do it either way. So like, does conflict enrich intimacy or other way around?
Yeah. So I guess it depends on how we're defining conflict. If I'm looking at conflict as far as not peaceful conflict, but it's like we haven't resolved, you know, we're not being polite with each other types of conflict, then obviously that can be created from lack of intimacy, you know, especially for their high libido partner who is feeling like, oh my goodness, you know, we haven't had any intimacy in a long time. Because that would be an example of their love bucket is low, which makes the claws come out.
Yeah.
Right. And so obviously intimacy issues, and for low libido partners, if they're constantly feeling pressured and used for their bodies, and that can make them feel really frustrated as well. So intimacy issues from that level can create conflict. But then also vice versa, if we're not handling conflict well, no matter what the topic's about, most likely that's going to carry over into the bedroom, because it's going to be hard for me to be physically there with you if I don't feel emotionally there first.
I like it. Okay. And I do like the imagery of, I love talking about being naked, not only just physically naked, but emotionally and mentally naked. Like there's nothing between you and I.
That's right. Yeah. Because if we have unresolved conflict, you know, and I don't feel like you're hearing my side, or I feel voiceless, or I feel whatever, we haven't reached a resolution, then it's, especially if I'm lower libido, higher libido partners, in my experience, they can sometimes go, they can kind of put that to the side and compartmentalize and still engage in sexual activity. Mm-hmm. The lower libido partners, even more so, they really need to feel that harmonious emotional closeness and connection before they're able to open the door to the sexual side.
Totally. Totally. I agree. Okay. So I'm going to ask you my signature question. If you had the undivided attention of every married couple in the entire world for just a few minutes, what is the most important thing you could teach them about happiness within marriage?
Well, one thing I would teach them is to view their marriage as alive, because it is. Marriage is alive. It's a living organism, and we don't view it that way. You know, most of us view marriage as like a one and done. Like, okay, I won that person. Now I can focus on kids. Now I can focus on career. And meanwhile, I'm neglecting this thing that's alive. I'm like putting it under my desk and it's not getting watered. It's not getting sunlight. It's not getting fertilization. And so to instead intentionally focus on, if this marriage of mine is alive, how would I be behaving different? How would I be nurturing it? How would I be tending to it? How would I be trying to grow it? Because it takes that. And because it's alive, it doesn't tolerate neglect for very long before it starts to wilt and die. Mm. So just that whole mindset, I think, can be powerful. I think the second thing I would teach is just this concept of this love bucket, where we all have fillers we desire and drainers that our partner does that sucks down the water. It's an interesting way to think of relationships, because if I can intentionally be thinking about what you desire every day and what you don't want, it changes my focus of my interactions with you. It makes me more mindful. And if you're also doing the same, we can develop the spirit of generosity and get away from the spirit of scarcity.
I love it. Very good advice. So Dr. Wyatt Fisher, where can my listeners find you and learn more from you and all of the wonderful things that you teach and help couples understand?
Probably my website would be the best, because that's where all my resources are listed. So they can just go to drwyattfisher.com. So just drwyattfisher.com.
Awesome. We'll make sure that's in the show notes. Thank you so much for your time today and all of your wonderful work with couples.
Sure. Thanks, Monica. Thanks for having me.
I absolutely love episodes where I get to talk to psychologists who are actively seeing patients, because I feel like they are in the trenches talking every day to couples who are working hard to repair their relationship and get back on the same page. Couples therapy is difficult, and typically those who are working with couples in crisis have a very unique perspective on marriage and what is most important. So I loved that interview with Dr. Wyatt Fisher. He also has a podcast called Marriage Steps that is definitely worth checking out. He does a couple episodes a week, and I think I was actually the first interview he's ever done on his podcast. So go check him out and let me know what you think. link of my interview on the Marriage Steps podcast. Also, I am so excited that I can finally announce that On the Brighter Side is getting a major facelift. I have been talking about something big that is on the horizon, and I can finally let you know that it has to do with this podcast and all of the content that will be here from now on. We are going to be focusing primarily on marriage and how to prioritize your marriage in order to get ahead in your business. I cannot wait to give you more details on this, but for now, just know that On the Brighter Side will soon become On the Brighter Side of Marriage, fully focused on giving you tips every single week on how you can strengthen your relationship to ensure more success in your business. I cannot wait to give you more details. But until next week, have courage, be kind, and stay on the brighter side.